Al-Qaeda quickly developed a close relationship with the National Islamic Front, and in particular, the Sudanese Intelligence Service. The government gave bin Laden's organization a couple of hundred valid Sudanese passports. Many Al-Qaeda operatives were wanted in other countries for various jihadist activities, so the new fraudulent identities made international travel easier. Members of the group were effectively detailed to the Sudanese authorities to help coordinate the immigration of Islamist radicals, serving as a vetting office to try to prevent unwanted foreign agents from gaining entry undercover. A mix of business and terror was a hallmark of Al-Qaeda's operations in Sudan. Various firms provided cash that bin Laden used to subsidize jihadist groups around the world and to pay for the training camps that terrorists could use as bases between operations. During these years, Al-Qaeda laid the foundation for its eventual role as keystone of international jihad. By early 1994, if not before, the group had begun work on acquiring weapons of mass destruction. Taking advantage of his close ties to the NIF, bin Laden invested in a Sudanese government operation to produce nerve gas. Khartoum had been fighting Christian rebels in the south of the country since 1983. But government forces in a succession of regimes had been unable to score a decisive victory against rebel forces, and hundreds of thousands of lives had been lost. There was frustration in Khartoum. Some officials believed that chemical weapons could end the deadlock. Bin Laden secretly invested in Sudan's military-industrial company, a government-owned firm that was conducting weapons development for the regime. The group's interest in unconventional weapons did not stop there. Al-Qaeda's leadership was eager to acquire nuclear arms. When word was received that uranium might be available on the black market, a senior Al-Qaeda official directed Jamal Al-Fadl to meet with the reported seller, a former government minister and military officer named Salah Abdel Al-Mobruk. Al-Fadl made contact with Al-Mobruk and was told that the uranium was indeed for sale. The price was $1,500,000 plus commissions, which had to be paid outside of Sudan. Al-Fadl reported this to his superiors and was instructed, despite the price tag, to communicate the group's interest and its desire for more information. Eventually, he and the top bin Laden aide, Abu Rida al-Suri, met with another contact, a man named Bashir. They were driven to a house in North Khartoum, where they were shown a cylinder 2 or 3 feet high. Engraved specifications on the cylinder indicated, among other things, that it was of South African origin. After further deliberations in Al-Qaeda, Al-Fadl relayed to Bashir that the group was interested in buying the uranium, subject to testing, which would involve machinery that had to be brought in from Nairobi. Al-Fadl was given a $10,000 bonus for his handling of the matter, and though he heard that the uranium was tested, he knew nothing more about the fate of the deal. It seems likely either that the material was not useful for a weapon, or that this was one of many scams that had been perpetrated involving the sale of supposed nuclear material. If the uranium had been weapons grade, and if the group could have created a bomb, which is considered easier than acquiring the fissile material, Al-Qaeda would have used it by now. The combination of terrorists and weapons of mass destruction is the stuff of countless movies and television shows. The reality is otherwise. Very, very few groups have ever seriously tried to acquire such weapons. Almost all of those that have, the Japanese cult Aum Shinrikyo is the exception, have sought them primarily for purposes of blackmail. Reading history backward, it is clear that extortion is not part of Al-Qaeda's inventory of tactics. Its forays into procuring unconventional arms are an unmistakable sign that Al-Qaeda is prepared to cross a threshold never before approached and kill in a way unlike that of any earlier terrorists. The period of this activity roughly coincides with that of the group's decision to focus on waging war against the United States. And it is hard to imagine that the two matters were not linked. It may not yet have known exactly how it would attack the United States, but Al-Qaeda was contemplating a kind of terrorist campaign and a level of carnage unlike anything seen before.